out there with 425-33.
It showed that Santa Cruz is one of the worst places in the country as far as rents and usable income from wages. This is about 2 or 3 weeks ago. I mean, you may not remember this. But.
Oh, yeah. That study, they do that every year, and they compare wages in an area versus the cost of housing. It's kind of like an index. Right. And
is that a local person who wrote that?
No, that's...
Right. I didn't think so. You know, I mean, we've heard a lot about how there's a new gang down at the Sentinel, a fighting band of reporters who've been called in by the aging Sentinel to buff up and give it young blood. Well, it looks like this is the same old, tired, cheesy, you know, infected blood I've seen for so long.
Okay, so our new number, the 6.6%, translates to 15,114 people who have experienced 3 months or more of homelessness in the last 5 years, according to a telephone poll.
Again, I want to remind you that this figure has nothing to do with the people who couldn't afford the rents and left. And I say there is probably a very significant number of people who left because they couldn't afford the rent. So we're talking about an even smaller fraction of people who are wealthy enough to be able to move in, have phones, and probably, in other words, a larger number of people were made homeless during this period or had to move out, much larger.
Right. The 60 unlawful detainers per month down at Santa Cruz County Courthouse, that represents putting a lot of people out on the streets.
We're not even talking about evictions. I'm talking about people who looked at the rents and said, I can't live here anymore. And so they left. And so the people who have moved in from San Jose and Silicon Valley, sure, they have had less homelessness in the last, you know, in the last decade because they're wealthier, you know. But the people who were part of the community who had to move out, they may have been homeless for even longer periods of time, struggled, gotten into housing, but we don't hear about them because the people that answer the phones are the people who have the money and they can pay the increased rents and have moved in recently.
Don't you think? I'd like to move on to some of the next points in our Sentinel article here. They mentioned 428 wintertime beds. And what I wanted to say about that, that's counting all programs other than the ISSP have...
Hang on a second, because the people we're talking to don't know what these things are. But before we start, what is the real situation as far as wintertime beds or, let's be nice and let's be real, floor spaces, cold floor spaces, so separated by an inch of mat? What do you really got in the winter here?
180.
So that's the reality of it. So remember that, folks. Now we turn to the Sentinel and we hear
428 wintertime beds. Now I want to explain that figure, not counting the ISSP, which is the Interfaith Satellite Shelter Program.
It's the emergency program which uses the churches and the armory every night. The only program accessible to someone walking off the street. All the other programs are waiting list transition type programs.
All other programs have waiting lists. And they also have requirements that make those programs unavailable to all homeless people. For example, some are drug treatment programs, some are for families only, some are for mental health beds. You can't just get into that program merely because you're homeless.
And I should point out to you, Becky, that I made this perfectly clear to Daryl Cole when he called me 3 days ago. He asked extensive number of questions, and so his talking about 428 wintertime beds...
It's deceptive. Okay, you can say yes, it's true. On one level, if you twist your mind in a certain direction, you can say it's true. But realistically, for homeless people, the number is 180.
No, you can't even say that. There are no beds. I would say there are 60 emergency shelter. I'm not even sure churches put people up on floors, not on beds.
Floors.
There's no beds. This bed bullshit is false from the word go. They're floor spaces.
That's correct. Okay, now, the next comment, where I think this came from Karen Gillette, where she said that no one is turned away.
A very important figure, because Rotkin uses it endlessly to show that there is no real human rights crisis as well, because if no one is turned away, then anybody who wants a legal place to sleep can get one, and the rest of the people are just being ornery who sleep outside.
I'm so glad that things have changed, because when we saw Karen Gillette at the December 8th City Council meeting, she reported that the armory really can only hold about 120 people. And Rotkin had endlessly reported that the armory had space for 200 people. And I think she was afraid to correct it. But now that Rotkin's in the minority, She sees that she can safely report the facts, and at least in that one instance.
That's amazing. Very timid, if we are correctly analyzing her, because she is really a very powerful person in this community. And even when Rotkin was in the majority, they would never cut off her funding or really interfere with her services. Also, whether it's 120 or 200, we're talking about a population of 500 to 1,500 people. So, who cares? That most numbers of homeless people are just not served.
Okay, when she says that no one is turned away, meaning that they still have some empty spaces at the end of the night, she isn't referring, maybe she did, but Daryl forgot to mention in his article, that couples who choose to stay together at night, people with pets, unaccompanied minors, people who are even slightly under the influence of alcohol, a legal substance, I might add, or drugs, are not allowed in. People who have respiratory health problems, I don't know if they're necessarily prevented from going in or discouraged from going in, but they certainly could add to a health risk for people in there. People who have been 86th from the program, there are other people.
Vets who can't sleep out inside.
There are others who are turned away. I think Paul Brindell was quoted as saying that there are 3,000 to 3,500.
Paul Brindell is the head of the Shelter Project and a very authoritative figure who spoke at the city council meeting, and he himself has spoken about the camping ban as being utterly impermissible when there's a shelter crisis. And he said this for years, and of course no one in the council is listening, and apparently the Sentinel isn't either.
Well, we're trying to, crunch these numbers. He said 3,000 to 3,500 homeless countywide. That's probably an undercount. It could be as high as 5,000.
6,600, I would say.
Well, let's put it this way. The national figures vary between 1 and 3% for any city in the country, their homeless rate. If you take the population, about 1 to 3%. Are homeless. And for Santa Cruz County, 1% is 2,290 and 3% is 6,870. I think it's reasonable to say that the homeless population varies between 3,000 and 7,000.
Again, what I was hoping that Daryl would do with this article is put some pressure on the city council, and he seemed to be sympathetic to this when he spoke to me, to get some action for real shelter. I mean, the sleeping ban too, of course. We're all looking for changes in that. But in the meantime, if people are freezing, or they're getting stabbed by a slasher as they were in San Francisco a month ago, or they're suffering illnesses and they can't come in to deal with them, as needle users are because they're getting harassed by the police when they try to get their needles exchanged, then, we need to see situations where people can come in out of the cold and deal with that situation. And we need a liberal council, just reelected, to respond to that. By the way, I'll say this again, and I encourage you, if you've called before, call now. 429-3550 is the number of the city council. Give them a call, even on Sundays, 429-3550. Push the pound key and say, yeah, I know I called you last week, but have you set up any shelter yet?
Well, hopefully their voicemail boxes will have some space for your message.
That's interesting. Keith Sugar's box was completely filled when I called it and stayed filled for 4 days. Either he's getting lots and lots and lots of calls every day, or he's not answering his calls too well, or maybe the staff is a little incompetent. Perhaps the system is broken down.
I want to move on to the article that appeared on the back page of the Sentinel today. It's entitled, A Lot of Misperception About the Camping Ban, where Daryl Cole interviews Steve Belcher at length. Steve Belcher, of course, the Santa Cruz Police Department police chief. And according to the article, Belcher reports that there are only 18 citations per month under 6.36.
I heard that earlier from Kitten Reynolds, who also called in with that article.
Yeah, that's about three. Of course, we've noticed the three to four tickets a day appear on the court calendars down at the county building. And that, of course, is an undercount, because that doesn't count tickets that people went and paid. Also, one thing listeners should be aware of, that the statistics that Belcher released are only for the Santa Cruz Police Department, Parks and Recreation officers.
I don't think everybody has the Sentinel in front of them. Let me ask you again the broad question first. What's your estimate of how many people suffer under the sleeping ban each year? Give me a broad figure of how many people you think either get ticketed or harassed by the Santa Cruz Police Department, the Parks and Rec, the California Highway Patrol, the UCSC Police. And I know you probably don't have exact figures, but you've certainly been working with the Committee to Repeal the Sleeping Ban, and you've been on the Citizens Committee for the Homeless, and you've been a loyal Huff person for a long time. In fact, you're the person who issues the press releases for Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom frequently. What's your sense of how many people get it from the cops for sleeping or covering up with blankets each year?
Okay, I'm estimating that 15 tickets are written a week, and of that citation, that works out to 780 a month. Now, for every time that a person is cited,
I mean 780 a month, 15 a week is
780 a year. Okay. Yeah. So, if a person is told, move along, get along, get your belongings together, get out of here, you know, say maybe they're warned five times, or out of every five times, one time a ticket is written, and four times they're told to move on. That's 3,900 encounters with the police a year. And that's a lot. That's a lot. Every homeless person I've talked to that's been on the street for any length of time has had some negative encounters with the police. And in the article, Belcher says that the citations are rarely written for sleeping. He says they're usually there because there's some other health thing, there's littering or defecation or alcohol and drug abuse.
In other words, they see defecation and littering, but they write sleeping tickets? Is that what he's saying?
Well, I've seen dozens of tickets that people have shown me their tickets, and it says on there that they're cited under A, sleeping. They were found sleeping.
I can understand how people would use their tickets to after defecating for cleanliness purposes, and I can understand how they would litter by throwing their tickets away. But the idea that police departments should be issuing tickets for the crimes of littering and defecation by not citing those particular offenses seems to me a little peculiar. I guess we'd be told, well, we didn't catch them in the act of taking a dump, or we didn't see them drop the litter on the ground, but they had a messy campsite, or there was some stuff nearby, so we assumed it was them, and then they're giving them a ticket instead for sleeping or camping, which, by the way, is going to be the main reason, the main excuse, the main argument of people for keeping the camping ban and keeping the sleeping ban, in my view.
Yeah, it has been. I know that when we were circulating our initiative to repeal the sleeping ban, and we're getting organization after organization to endorse our initiative for these human rights changes that are necessary in the law, there was only one organization that went on record as opposing it, and that was the Santa Cruz Police Department. And the reason they cited was that they thought there would be an increase in littering. I say, according, to that and to what Belcher has quoted in today's article, saying that if a person, if they're littering, cite them for littering. If they're publicly defecating, then cite them for that.
I'd go further than that. I'd say forget all that citing stuff and put in some trash cans and some public restrooms, and then do an educational campaign that talks about, keep our city clean, help the homeless programs get more money by keeping our city clean. And if you did that kind of positive outreach program, I think it'd have much more impact on public behavior, particularly if you emphasize things like, our city respects human rights. Our city says, yes, you can sleep at night. Our city, unlike other cities, doesn't arrest people for performing necessary human functions. And when you put this into a public relations campaign that also says to homeless people, be proud of our city, respect our city, respect the environment, I think you get a real response.
Well, I think one of the great failings of this new council so far is that they haven't even brought up the idea of a car park or a campground for homeless people. Those are the kinds of shelter spaces that do need to be expanded. A huge number of Santa Cruz's homeless are living in their vehicles. They need to be near porta potties. They need to have access to water. They need those kinds of service, a good garbage collection. Those are things that our entire city wants. And if you're going to have problems with illegal campers up in the Poganip having a negative impact on the environment, then you need some place for those people to go, and a well-managed campground, which even Michael Hernandez said he would support in one of his election pitches, and he repeated that at the March 4th study session, although we haven't heard anything from him since, or a car park, a place where people, even a nighttime car park, Robert, some place where people could legally park their vehicles and sleep at night and then be gone in the daytime. You know, even that has not crossed the lips of anyone on the city council, nor do they seem willing to entertain that. Instead, we hear this fear-mongering rhetoric about what happened with Coral Street Open Air Shelter.
Yeah.
That it was inundated with 700 people a few weeks after its opening, which never happened, I think.
I don't want to hear you repeating all these misconceptions, frankly, Becky, but you can if you want, if you insist on it. I would like to instead invite our listeners to join working groups to try to put forward new solutions and essentially to document the realities rather than the myths. That's what we need to do for the community, for the city council, and for ourselves to make this dialogue a really significant one. And I invite people to give a call to 423-HUFF, 423-4833, if you want to be a part of this process. We're going to be forming working groups, working with city council members, and we need people who are interested in this issue, who want to do some outreach on it, who want to help organize writing letters to the paper on this, who want to organize calling into talk shows, and want to organize, essentially, I think, getting together the research that shows that, as you've said, there are real solutions to problems, but in order to get to the real solutions, you got to get past the fantasies and the fears. You kicked me for some reason, Becky. What is it you would like to say?
Well, I don't remember exactly what I kicked you for a few minutes ago, but I did want to add that something you said reminded me that people should call the Huff line, and one thing we're specifically asking a Burr about is that Chief Belcher reported that of the people that have been cited for camping ban violations that actually went to jail, were arrested and taken to jail, only 9 were jailed because of past warrants. So he's saying that out of 754 complaints that they investigated,
you're wrong about that. He didn't say because of past warrants. He said because of the citation. In other words, only 9 people were directly taken to jail for citations. I think that's what my reading of that was. Am I wrong about that? She's checking the article now as we speak. We're talking to Becky Johnson of the Citizens Committee for the Homeless and the Huff Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, and she's reading now from that article in the Sentinel.
Here's what it says. It says, of the 22 people actually arrested and put in jail after a camping violation complaint, 9 were wanted for prior warrants, and 7 were also suspected of being drunk.
Okay, now, that's different than a camping ban warrant. Maybe you were saying that and it wasn't.
Warrants. Yeah. Warrants.
Many more, of course, are getting arrested for camping ban warrants as well. In other words, there's often what you see on court calendars is you see the camping ban offense, then you see 3 other offenses, one of which may be a warrant from a prior offense, and that, I guess, is what he's saying. Only 9 of them were...
Out of 754 encounters with the police following up on complaints, citizen complaints, mm-hmm. about possible camping ban violations...
Only 9 were...
...were for prior warrants. That seems to really defy logic to me. There's a high percentage of homeless people who have some kind of warrant out. Now, it's not just for camping ban. They may have past camping tickets that they couldn't pay and that went to warrant. But that could be for sitting on a sidewalk, for asking for spare change after dark, for having an open container. It could be any number of citations that they may have received that they've been unable to pay because they're homeless, and if they had money, they wouldn't be homeless. And it seems that just defies logic.
Right. What is your problem with the statistic? It's not clear to me what your objection is about it, one way or the other.
It just doesn't seem realistic.
In other words, again, let's focus on the truth, and then deal with these fantasies. What is the truth as distinguished from the fantasies, as far as you think? I know you can't be entirely accurate. You don't have access to the police records and the court records.
I don't know the truth. That's why I'm asking your listeners who are out there. Is there anybody out there who when the police came and to check and see whether they were violating the camping ban law, were they ever arrested and taken to jail because of a past warrant? Can we get more? Were there more than 9 people in the last year that's happened to?
I think it's clear that more than 9 people have been taken to jail pursuant to a camping ban ticket. And I'm not just talking about a warrant for a camping ban ticket that happens later. When people are perceived to be sleeping or covering up with blankets or at an established campsite, the 3 criterion for violating the camping ban, any one of them is sufficient, then usually what happens is people are issued tickets. But that is not always the case, and I don't think it was only in 9 cases that people went to jail. I know in terms of... 22 went to jail?
22 went to jail.
And 9 of those were for other warrants?
9 of those... Of the 22 who were taken to jail, 9 went to jail because they had some prior warrants. That's according to Belcher's figures. When I'm calling into your logical mind to question... If does that sound logical? Does that sound reasonable? Does that sound accurate? And if it's not accurate, why is Belcher giving out inaccurate information?
You know, I'm not sure if it's accurate or not, but even if it were accurate, I would say that it doesn't take a lot of tickets to create a great amount of fear. A few tickets can create a lot of fear and a lot of unsafe behavior by homeless people. They have to hide, they have to isolate themselves, they have to worry about where they are, they have to worry about moving on, and even if it's only 2 or 3 tickets, that's 2 or 3 tickets too many. First, because you don't ticket people for violating you don't violate the human rights by telling them they get a ticket for sleeping. You give them a ticket for something else, yes, but not for sleeping. You know, but secondly, the very act of ticketing a person creates this kind of fear and stops a lot of legitimate, self-defensive, life-sustaining behavior.
You know, I recently talked to 2 homeless women. They each had a different story to tell me. One woman said that the police came out. She was camping, and the police came and told them to move along, get out of there. And they took a knife and slashed her tent. And she was not cited. But her property was destroyed.
When was this?
It was a while ago. It wasn't really recent, but it was very recent in her memory. You know, I mean, she cannot sleep a single night without the memory of that experience. And the other woman told me that she had a backpack, and the police came, and one of the officers sort of kicked her backpack with his foot, and he heard a bottle jostling around. He considered that reasonable cause to search her backpack, and he did find an open container of alcohol in there. She said then he took the cap off of it and poured the alcohol all over the clothes and her other belongings inside that backpack.
He was obviously trying to purify the clothing and help her deal with a health problem.
So, you know, I mean, these are 2 encounters these women told me about. Neither of them were very recent, but they were very recent in their memory, and they certainly colored their feelings and attitudes towards the police and their fear of the police.
Well, we want to hear from you callers, and we're at 427-3772 here at Free Radio Santa Cruz 96.3 FM, and you're listening to Becky Johnson, and I'm your host, Robert Norris. Is incidents that have happened fairly recently, preferably after December 8th, but any incidents in the last couple months will do, where you feel or have observed and or know of police acting in an inappropriate manner, particularly around the sleeping and blanket bans, but just toward homeless people generally? Looks like we have an incoming call we're going to take here. And
you're on the air, caller.
Hi, I have a couple questions and a couple statements stemming from what I've just been listening to.
Uh-huh.
I have that article, but aren't there at least 9 people who still have warrants left over from their lawyer putting them on a kind of probation left over from the City Hall protest. I know there's one because it's me.
Really?
And it's a wound I can't cure.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
I hadn't heard there were many people who got probation. I know, I don't think Dan Hopkins, for example.
Whatever you call that deal Kate made.
Or Robert Flory got probation. I know that, oh, you may be right. You know,
a whole batch of us got whatever the, I don't know what exactly you call that particular getting fucked, but I know I can't fix the warrant because it doesn't lead to anything in their computers. And the only ticket I got that whole year was so-called sleeping at City Hall.
And so people are getting tied up, and your sleeping, of course, was because you were trying to, you were sleeping in solidarity, or you were sleeping because you had no place to go?
Yeah, I was going right there in the daytime in solidarity, but I happened to be homeless a month longer than I had money or plan or ideas for.
You're talking about your sleeping at the City Hall sleepers protest in 1996, where there were literally hundreds of tickets issued to dozens of people who, for 7.5 months,
And I was trying to be a good buddy to all of them, and in fact, sometimes my son and I were being fed as an adjunct to that, so I was getting support back, too. But before it ended, we were homeless and had to stay downtown because there's other people I also have to help take care of. So, yeah, I was either sleeping there on the cement, and it's because of the safety of numbers more than the demonstration I'm speaking of at night, or else I was sleeping on some other side of the City Hall or the library, among, you know, with lots of other people, like mushrooms after a rain.
Have you heard anything more recent around police misconduct? I know I've heard stories of, I've filed complaints about them. Lloyd Lawrence, the elderly man I've talked about on the air, who was...
Yeah, I finally met him, Robert. No, I have heard a lot...
His van was smashed on... And because he was catheter-ing himself, Officer Northrop gave him a sleeping ticket in spite of a disabled plate. And I don't even know if that ticket was quashed or has gone to court.
Well, believe me, if you don't deal with it, if you don't get to court within the 30 days or whatever on the ticket, signed or not, it will haunt you. And they will bring you back here from afar, even from other states, over having slept, if you neglect the legal bullshit.
Yeah, that doesn't always happen, but it certainly has happened.
And I know of a kid whose birthday present when he turned 18 was 2 weeks in jail because of camping tickets. How could he even have gotten them? How could he be cited before he was an adult?
Well, I think we need to really get information from our listeners out there, caller, as to who is getting ticketed, who's doing the ticketing, how many tickets are happening, or even more than that, how many people are being told that, contrary to what the City Council voted on December 8th, sleeping is a human right. As far as the police department is concerned, it's not a human right, and even though we're not going to give you a ticket, you better move along down the road to where, you know, I mean, it's certainly illegal everywhere in the city. You know, and Miami and Fort Lauderdale have essentially made it the policy that if there is no shelter bed, officers can't go near a homeless person in order to stop them for this kind of offense. They can't even talk to homeless people.
Yeah, so they put up a rope somewhere and put a few police or goons there. I mean, first alarm, I'm sorry, or some sort of hosts. And then they say that's a place for you, you know. I mean, this city's got it.
They don't have a place for people. And the idea,
and
what I'm saying is, I would like people to call in, and I would like them to let us know, if not on air, then perhaps on the Huff line, the line for Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom. Mm-hmm. Give a call to 423-HUFF if you have been approached by a police officer, told to move on, or even questioned about your situation regarding sleeping or covering up with blankets or camping. Because this is information we need to get directly to the Crone Sugar Buyers Subcommittee. It looks like our guest, Becky Johnson, is leaving. Becky, I want to thank you for being with us. And caller, you're welcome to hang on the line here for a bit if you'd like. Or
I have a couple points, other.
Okay. Before you continue, let me again thank Becky for her analysis of the Santa Cruz Sentinel article of today.
Yeah.
It's I often tend to, you know, I look at a Sentinel article and then I kind of leave it behind because it's, you know, they make all kinds of distortions and we have all kinds of problems. But as I said, the really important thing is not just to correct their distortions, but to put out what the real story is for the community, and to be assured ourselves as to what that real story is. And to get that real story, we need people like yourself, caller, calling in to 423-HUFF with information. You know, drop a dime on a bad cop. Drop a dime on a bad law. That's what you have to do. and we will keep those records for you until the City Council Subcommittee sets up what it really needs to be a hotline, and hopefully it will be set up in the next week. I think that idea was favorably looked upon by Mayor Byers and Councilmember Crone when I talked to them about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's very appreciated to have someone like Ms. Johnson trying to get to the roots of the misinformation, too. You know that figure where they said 6,000 below the poverty line?
Yeah.
Anybody who's worked with poor people at all knows that's absolutely inaccurate. But I thought of what it might be. I mean, this reporter's kind of sloppy, like a newbie or something. I don't know what the problem is. Maybe the Murdoch conglomerate, I don't know. But that could be the number of people who get the food stamps they're eligible for this area. That would be consistent with that.
And you're saying that only a quarter of the people who are really poor get food stamps?
I'm saying there's lots of people that are eligible for food stamps who don't get them because they're already living one day at a time and they don't have time to sit around for days for a bureaucrat to take their signature.
By lots, you mean three-quarters of the people eligible don't get them?
It varies and it's hard to pin down, so I'm not willing to put my name behind a number.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, there's a whole lot more people who are eligible, especially elderly people and the very young, like 18, 19, 20, 21-year-olds. People under 23 can get free health care if they don't have any means to, and they're never told. But anyway, so a lot of people that deserve and are eligible for that entitlement don't get it, but there's about 6,000 families who do, give or take from month to month. It goes up a little in the winter.
6,000 families, they were talking about 6,400 people, period, individuals.
Yeah. Well, I'm telling you, this Daryl guy doesn't know what he's talking about. Let's start with that as a given.
Well, if he knows it, he certainly isn't putting it out in those figures.
If he's, yeah, that's not the poverty line by any means. Half of the community is living on or below the poverty line.
The point of all these figures is, of course, to make it appear that everything is rolling along fine and that we can keep our camping and sleeping bans and nothing is amiss here. I think that
reminds me of the other point. Becky quoted something Belcher said in this Rear article.
Police Chief Belcher, yeah.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
This, again, must be the reporter's misunderstanding or somebody manipulating his misunderstanding. It seems that the police chief's reason for wanting to have the camping bans is so that they can have a way to hassle people who poop or litter, not because they catch them doing it. That got twisted around, because I remember that argument when they put the camping ban in place and the first time they tinkered with it. It's the same, what would you call it, slander that they use against young people who congregate. You know, oh, we've got to have a curfew because they'll just be sitting around by the time we catch up with them to see what sneaky thing they're doing.
Uh-huh.
You know, like every young person who's not present is potentially guilty of being an enemy of the state or something, that mentality. Well, the same thing was used to put the sleeping plank in the camping ban in the first place.
You know, you were living in Santa Cruz in 1978 when this law passed. Do you remember anything about that process?
I have trouble remembering numbers. I can remember things chronologically.
1978 was the summer when the Scotts Creek trial was ended was dismissed.
When I got evicted for helping people get a shower on their way to court.
Does that jog your memory?
Yes. Yes, it does.
Yeah, this law was passed in the fall, two or three months after that trial ended, in the fall of 1978. That was around the time of the Briggs Initiative. It was around the time of the Jonestown Massacre. It was around the time of
the later rescinded Backe decision.
It was during the governorship of Jerry Brown and the presidency of
So Chris Matthews would have been on the county board of supervisors.
Of Carter, and yeah. If that helps you, maybe you...
Who was the city council mayor, do you remember?
I believe Bert Muley was the mayor.
Okay.
Although, again, I wasn't interested in the city politics in those days, so I wasn't much involved. But if you remember, do you remember anything about that period of time? So
yeah.
So you were living here then.
Yeah. I remember wasting a lot of time in court. I remember so much of what was going on and sort of being effective because people had joined forces and congregated, and even after being harassed by the police, kept their unity together, and it all getting diverted into the legal system.
Yeah, I think you're referring to the fact that the Scotts Creek Bluff campers who had been driven out of town, That is to say,
by city police.
It wasn't like a gang was driven out of town. It was everybody sleeping in their vehicle essentially were getting ticketed and driven out of town. And then when they were out of town, even though they were in the county where it was not technically illegal to sleep, they were harassed by the police or the deputies out there as though they were driven further and further north until finally Scott's Creek Bluff, which is now it no longer exists as an open space accessible to the public, but it was then. And a small community of campers formed their vehicles there, parked their vehicles there, and then took a stand there. When police came, they stayed with their vehicles. Their vehicles were towed away. They sat in the county building to protest their vehicles. These were, 20 or 30 people, including women and children?
Little families living in station wagons.
And they were then accused of multiple counts, not of camping ban violations, because this was in the county, but I think it was trespass and some county law, violation. And they actually succeeded in getting a jury nullification where virtually everybody was found not guilty, even though they admitted they were all guilty. They showed that they needed to do what they did. And this was such a success, and maybe this can give us some insight. And again, I don't know. Bert Muley has never quite opened with me on this issue too clearly. I need to talk to him some more.
Let's hope he gives us some insight.
Yeah, but what I think happened was, and let me just finish this, Linda.
Okay.
Because I think you're Linda that I'm talking to on the phone. I know who you are. You're an activist with Housing Now, as I recall.
And back then I was an able-bodied one.
And what happened, I think that the city council, seeing this victory by so many homeless or vehicularly housed people, it was in those days, took alarm or decided they were going to tighten up their own laws, and they passed this revised thing that we have now that's called, this monstrosity called the camping ban, which included the sleeping ban and the blanket bans.
Absolutely. The county also took action to make it more criminal.
But I'd love to get some testimony that's my speculation. I don't really have clear, no council member of that day has said to me, that's why we did it. And Rotkin, of course, one of our council members now, propounds the idea that, it had to do with messy San Jose campers from the beaches, which I think has nothing to do
with it. Well, I think that's an important point. It shows the intent of the city council to create selective laws that can only be enforced selectively. So it's important, even though that was a terrible,
it would be important if we had any evidence of it. And unfortunately, you don't remember that, really.
What?
You don't
the remember, passing of the law?
You don't remember the city council debate around it, I take it.
Not in the in-person way that I might something recent, but
right.
Yeah, I remember the unfolding of the law. And, I felt at the time it was in direct response to effective community organizing. When we started getting people like Herb Foster and the establishment house community to support what was going on and to help monitor the way the people from Scott's Creek had been trashed and persecuted and prosecuted, things changed. And people started talking about it at City Hall.
That could well be. Well, I kind of interrupted you in the points you were making. Do you have more points you want to make before we go?
No, but I want to make sure you got the one about Belcher.
What was that
about? The sleeping bag. I think maybe today's paper sort of garbles a point Belcher may have been trying to make, which is we need something that criminalizes benign behavior so we don't have to catch a person actually crapping to criminalize them.
Yeah, they're looking for laws as tools, I think Belcher has always said, for picking and choosing and, IDing and searching and interrogating. You see this happening with young people on the Pacific Avenue a lot.
Yeah, people that don't even know their rights.
Where, people who are ignorant of their rights are essentially being put into databases by the police and for future reference.
The last time I saw Sean Alamy alive, I had just had a brief chat with him, and then he excused himself from me so that he could help this woman who was obviously distressed because she had to walk her dog across the mall, and it's illegal, and she was new in town, so she didn't know what, if any, alternate routes there are because the streets jog on the mall. There's no straight way through. So, he told her he would escort her, no one would bother her, and her dog would make it across the street from the UCSD side to the riverside.
It's illegal for those who are listening and don't know to have a dog on Pacific Avenue.
It's illegal to have a skate. It's illegal to have a bicycle. It's probably illegal to have a cane, but there ain't no problem in having some construction company build right off the street.
It's not illegal to have a bicycle. It's illegal to ride your bicycle against the flow of traffic.
Or on the sidewalk if there's people on it.
Or on the sidewalk, that's correct. And you have to walk your bicycle on the sidewalk.
Yeah, well, my bicycle's a cane, and they're just going to have to make me.
Live it. Yeah, I can dig that. Anything more you want to say, Linda?
Not in this context.
All right. Well, okay. Thank you.
Bye.
These fearful times make willing slaves who seek their freedom in their chains. Reagan's election was no surprise. You voted for Nixon twice. Why? Because you're stupid!
Mime Troupe, Because You're Stupid. We have on the line a man who is arguably not stupid. That's Skidmark Bob Duran. Hi, Bob.
That could be argued.
Indeed.
I'm sure some people would think I would be.
Now, you are something of a cop watcher, and you were at the Mumia protest yesterday. It was also, I guess, part of Steve Argue's protest against seizure of street newspapers and the sleeping ban, harassment of poor people. That was down at the town clock.
Everything in one big ball.
Yeah, what, you got a report for us?
Yeah. Well, first I just wanted to make a little note about the front cover of the Sentinel picture of the people loading up in the van.
Mm-hmm.
It says, people line up in front of the Homeless Community Resource Center. But it's in front of City Hall where the picture is taken from the other night when they talked about the camping van. I just thought it was funny that the Sentinel would lie about something.
They missed it by a mile, I guess.
But anyway, yeah, I was in the Free Mumia March yesterday, December 12th, and actually me and my three-year-old son marched in it the whole way, all the way from the start at Bay Tree Bookstore, where people got together and they had shirts and they had all sorts of flyers handing out and signs, Free Mumia, Abu Jamal, and all political prisoners, and Peace and Freedom Party people, and we all met and started out with about 100 people and started marching down from the Bay Tree Bookstore, and I noticed right away that we were followed by the campus police, which stayed way out of the way. They just stayed way out of the way, like they'd follow back within a quarter mile and stop and just observe what was going on. And we took up one whole lane, and the other lane was open. We had our own traffic control, people like stopping traffic and then allowing other traffic to go when it was clear, and that was working great all the way down the hill. Went down to the beginning of campus there as we're walking down. I think it's, what street is that, Bay? I'm not sure.
Yeah, it could be Bay.
Anyway, we're going down, and the Transit Authority, Santa Cruz Metro Transit Authority, their little cops that, I guess they have bus cops that travel around those little white cars, were following us like within a quarter mile away, just watching, nobody complaining about us taking up a whole lane of the street.
How many were you anyway?
Well, about the time we hit Santa Cruz, like Mission Street, we had about 100, 150 people.
Mm-hmm. And we weren't breaking any windows, or you weren't littering.
No, and we had talked previously about
the street,
we were everybody was just well behaved, of course, and nobody was flipping off anybody, and there were a couple irate drivers, but most of the people were honking in support of Momia.
Mm-hmm.
And we had gotten all the way down to Mission Street and turned left on Mission and got into the far right lane, which cars were able to pass us, and we had people keeping people on that lane. Everything was fine, no problems. We even passed a couple of Santa Cruz police officers. Then we turn right on Laurel Street and go down the hill, and everything was fine. We stopped and kept waited up for some of the stragglers like myself, because it's kind of hard to have a kid with you when you're in a march. And we made it all the way down to about Loudon Nelson Center when, lo and behold, Lieutenant Vlasis in his police car comes just screaming up in his car and cuts the whole march off with his car, jumps out of his car. He's all, get up on the sidewalk! Get up on the sidewalk right now! Pushed a couple of people, pushed his woman, and him and BD got into a little argument. He says, look, we're fine. Nobody's bothering anybody, you know? And nobody's complaining. He just, like, would drive up again another few feet, pull in front of the march, jump out, push people up on a sidewalk. He almost hit BD, who's one of the organizers there, with his car, which I think I'm going to file a complaint against Lieutenant Vlasis.
A Monday morning? I mean,
I suppose so. And I have to. I mean,
yeah,
I mean
you can also
another officer's following him behind him, just like, I don't know what's going on. You know, he wasn't telling people to get on the side. It was all Lieutenant Vlasis' thing. And we finally got all the way down to Laurel, and he cuts us off again. And so what does everybody do? Just go around his car, back out in the street, and we cut across Laurel and onto Pacific. And Pacific was great. We had so many supporters. Everybody but the Santa Cruz police, and they were looking really angry at us. You know, we had no problems with the campus police, no problems with the metro police, but when it came to Lieutenant Vlasis, I don't know.